When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Monica, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 17 through 24 of The Sun and the Star. We had mixed feelings. Actually, no, we had mostly negative feelings about these chapters. I see what you meant when you said that they keep getting distracted. Like, we are in chapters 24 and they are not even near Tartarus.
That's some feedback I have on this. You know, I feel like it's a marketing problem, like being marketed as the book where as Will and Nico go to Tartarus, and the cover of the book is like them in Tartarus, and we're pretty much halfway through and they're not there yet. They're not close.
I think with the other PJO books, a lot of it is them trying to figure out what the prophecy could mean. In this, they're just going straight to Tartarus. They have a prophecy. We have not heard them mention it once. I can't even remember what the prophecy originally was.
It was pretty straightforward. It was kind of like, go to Tartarus.
Yeah.
But it had that one ominous line about him needing to like leave behind something of equal importance. And he's like, oh no, what if it's Will?
That's true. And that has been brought up a couple of times. But a lot of this is just so all over the place, even timeline-wise, that it makes me feel like it's a slower read. I love the character of Will and Nico. Like, they made me blush and giggle and kick my feet.
And they were real cute in some of the flashbacks in this section.
Yeah.
They were pretty cute, yeah.
They were really cute. They're very, like, they actually represent what is more of like a teen relationship instead of being super serious. Like, they're both anxious attachment styles and they're trying to figure out what it means to be boyfriends and like each other and stuff like that. Whereas Percy and Annabeth, because they like were friends for so long first and then got in a relationship, Percy's like, Annabeth is my entire world. And then they also had just so much shared trauma. It's like they can't be without each other. Will and Nico kind of give, which sounds like a slur, but Piper and Jason.
Oh, God.
But obviously really in the sense that the both of them are hesitant in the relationship. They're questioning it in that sense, but without
Jason, I don't think ever questioned their relationship, though. It was very one-sided looking back. Like, Jason was just like, this is my girlfriend. And Piper was like, do I even like men? But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, when we get their like separate POVs, we see that they're kind of on different pages and have very different worries. And also, yeah, like Percy and Annabeth have a lot of shared trauma, whereas even in these first chapters of this section, like, this is the first time Will is learning about Nico's experience in Tartarus, and so they have a lot of catching up to do to understand one another better.
Yeah, and they're growing together too. But if I had the book outline in front of me when they were constructing it, I think I would have constructed it a little different. The flashbacks and forths are not my favorite, especially because it's like they're having these bonding moments in the canoe and going back and telling these beautiful stories. And then it was like grabbed back into the version of Nico and Will that are kind of uncomfortable with sharing with each other. And then sprung forward to where they're really like looking out for each other and they're reminiscing. And I guess that is like a relationship, especially a teen relationship, but why do I have to be subjected to that? I just want happiness.
What is confusing, and I can get into this more in my notes, but what this honestly might be all I had thought of, but what's confusing to me is it's like a flash forward, but it's them telling a story in the past, in the future.
Yeah.
Like, it's very confusing timeline-wise, and I'm an adult reader. So I'd be curious how this lands for, like, young readers. But also, I know that a lot of people really love this book, and, like, what they're taking away from this book is more, like, the fun things we learn about the characters and the overarching message. But I really do wonder about, like, how the timeline lands for younger readers, because I find it confusing. But maybe that's my adult brain getting dumber. You never know.
It's what happens to us, honestly.
Yeah, we need linear things.
Yeah. It's too complicated to have multiple timelines.
Mm-hmm. You either have two timelines, or if you have two timelines, stick to one POV, you know? Like, that's what... Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's talk about these chapters, because this episode we're going to learn a little bit more about Nico's terrifying past with Mommy Nyx. And we're going to meet my mom, Persephone, who has she's only really showed up in the original PJO, and she's kind of a bitch. So this was kind of fun to see her more all-powerful rather than, like, apathetic and, I don't know, whiny.
Now she's a bad bitch.
She's a bad bitch. I liked her in this. Stepmommy vibes.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, so I got chapters 17 through 20. So we start off, we pick up where we left off in the previous chapter with Nico detailing his adventures in Tartarus from the last time he was there. Also the only time he was there. Mm-hmm. Yet he's the only person to ever decide to make, like, a repeat trip to Tartarus.
Yeah.
And he is telling them, the Trogs and Will, about the last time that he met Nyx. He spent a lot of time walking around Tartarus by himself, hearing voices, feeling crazy, trying to get to the doors of death to save the world. Which, again, I'm just, like, reflecting on the fact that Nico tried to do all this by himself is wild.
He makes a good point where he mentions in the book where he's, like, starts seeing things because the mist kind of starts evaporating for him and can't shield him anymore. And he realizes that when you're feeling crazy and you can't trust your eyes, it's nice to have someone to, like, confer with and confirm what you're seeing. And he can't do that, so he just has to sit with his crazy and feeling crazy.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's a good allegory for, like, you know, just normal things when you start seeing things.
Yeah.
Or thinking things, like having another person there to be like, am I crazy? And Nico did not have that.
No.
And even now that he does have Will, he's very reluctant to voice those things to Will.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get there, Nico. So we see him drinking the water from the river Phlegethon out of desperation, which is unlike how Annabeth and Percy were, because they drank from it. Annabeth was like, this will revive us because she knows everything. Nico had no clue if he would live from it, but he was so tired and thirsty. He had no other option, and he was kind of going off a guess. After what could have been hours or weeks wandering around Tartarus, we get to the moment he first encountered Nyx. He overheard the voice of Nyx herself chiding her children for being disobedient, and then he spots her. She is a large woman, three times the size of an adult human woman, swathed in smoke and ash that swirls around her, with a deep black dress that glitters and twinkles with entire galaxies, which is very cool. She has a great look.
I was thinking of the really popular 2012 Galaxy leggings.
No. Did you ever have a pair?
I didn't. I was not
me
that
neither.
Girl.
I didn't either. I didn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw them in the wild yesterday after I saw you.
Oh. Are they making a comeback?
No, I don't think so. Oh. It was not on someone who looked very...
some weirdo.
I would say they were not very stable. I don't know if they were, they seemed houseless. And so I was just like looking at it, and I was like, huh, just like reminded me of those. And then I read this and I was like, wow, I'm being haunted by these, the idea of like galaxy leggings. So I'm sure that Nyx is a lot more intense.
I like that I'm imagining like a really, like a ball gown with galaxies, and like in your mind, it's just like a dress with that pattern on it
from like Hot Topic. I'm also thinking leggings, actually. Like, I understand it says dress, but I'm just imagining Nyx wearing these leggings and Nico being like, that's the coolest shit I've ever seen.
And he also describes her as being a very large woman. So she's like mostly legs at that point. Like she has to wear multiple pairs of the leggings sewn together.
It's a custom. A custom build.
Yeah. By, didn't we have a character? We, I don't think we named her. Someone who does the villain's wardrobes.
That's true.
The stylist. She works with Brittany.
Hair stylist. Yes. They work together. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we did name her, maybe someone who's listening will recall. But if we did, it didn't stick, you know?
No, not the way Brittany did.
Yeah. Whoever dresses the specifically the underworld villains is really cool and very edgy. So I did do a little deep dive on the list of Nyx's kids because I have a lightning bolt question related to it for later. And I went into Google to search who all her children are. And there are a lot, so I won't list all of them. But I made a list of some particular ones that I thought were interesting. So Aether and Hemera, which are Air and Day, the two deities of light. And they're unlike all of Nyx's other children because they're not like darkness deities. They are air and day. So I thought that one was interesting.
Interesting that night gave birth to day, and then the day is not like an opposing character. It's like just a child of night.
It's interesting.
Sibling to air.
And it's like saying, yeah, sibling to, I mean, air because like sky, I guess. Mm. But I thought that was interesting. I was really into the fact that Nyx also, there's certain groups of her children that are classified as hordes. I think she just like birthed all of them at once. She has her sons, so her like son horde, which are the Oneroi, who are the dreams and nightmares, which is what we talked about in the last episode. So that's Epialis, falls into the Oneroi category, presumably. There are her horde daughters, which are the Caries, who we met in House of Hades, I remember. Annabeth and Percy were, like, fighting them off. They represent violent and cruel deaths. And I remember them, like, attacking Percy, and he would, like, feel the way different people died that he had killed. She also birthed the Fates, too, as I classified as, like, a horde, three at once. I guess that's just triplets, but...
Yeah, they're just the triplets. They now have a taxi service. No, that's not the Fates.
No, those are the Grey Ladies.
The Grey Ladies, yeah.
They're separate. Don't worry. They do seem, like, similar. Like, they want to be the Fates.
Yeah. The they want to be it, yeah.
Yeah.
I also love that, like, the boys are dreams and the daughter are violent and cruel death.
I mean, I guess the dreams is inclusive of nightmares also, but I thought that was a weird, it was like her son horde, the Oneroi, and her daughter horde, and the violent death. It's like, okay.
Good cool. for them.
Good for them. And then she's also the mother of a bunch of gods and goddesses like Hypnos, Thanatos, Nemesis, Eris, etc. So yeah, lots of kids. There's some notable ones that she has. So then back to the memory retelling of Nico's time in Tartarus. Nyx catches Nico eavesdropping and then grabs him with her tendrils of darkness, which I thought was very cool. So cool. She knows who he is. She's like, Tartarus strips away all, like, pretenses. I know who you're the child of. I know your name. She tells him that he belongs in the darkness, not above with the mortals. Yet before she can torture him further, the giants arrive. And it is our old friends, Otis and Ephialis, not Epialis, not to get them confused. The theatrical giants, who are there to take Nico away and put him in a jar as bait for the Seven. I actually think they were the origin of Brittany.
Yes, like our episode,
because they had really ridiculous, like one was like green and one was blue or something, and they had like a lot of things in their hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the OGs. So, and then everyone else also had like really intense hairstyles.
The giants in particular, yeah. It's like part of the job description. Like you have to be willing to get your hair done.
Yeah, pay for it.
Every day.
It's a lifestyle, not a job.
Yeah, yeah. They don't get paid. Nico attempts to escape from the giants, and he tries to go through the House of Night. But what he sees there, he says, breaks him. There's a bunch of darkness. There's no way out. As we recall, when Percy and Annabeth ran through there, I believe it was an Annabeth perspective chapter, and she had her eyes closed the whole time. And so it, because it was like, what you see in there will break you. It's kind of like Tartarus completely stripped away and all the darkness is there and the cruelty of the world. There's a lot of bats also.
Just you know.
Yeah.
I bats think about do the scare house. Me. You know, the opening of the Scooby-Doo theme song? That's what I'm imagining.
Wait, I don't know what you're talking about. Scooby-Doo theme song house.
And like the original Scooby-Doo?
Yeah. No, that's totally accurate, honestly. That's totally what it sounds like.
Yeah. The theme song basically starts with first the bats all come out of the house and then the music starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what this is based off of?
100%. I would not do well in Tartarus. I'd be like, you know, it's going to be like Scooby-Doo's house. And then walk in and, like, my mind will melt.
Are you just, like, the whole time be like, you know what that looks like? Those galaxy pants.
Roast her. What are you, from 2012?
I've seen, like, I think it was a TikTok, and it was, like, me and my friend cracking up when we get kidnapped because the cabin he keeps us in kind of looks like the folklore cabin. That's the vibe I'm giving off right now.
It's the vibe we would bring to Tartarus.
Yeah. So Nyx catches Nico and gives him over to the giant, and into the jar Nico goes. We then snap out of the flashback and back into the present. Everyone is kind of traumatized by Nico's story. Even Will hasn't heard all of it before, and Nico has to have a good cry before he can regroup. Once Nico calms down, the Trogs come to the conclusion that it's Nyx they've been sensing and, like, smelling. She's moving around. She's plotting. Imagine someone being able to smell you when you plot. It sucks. Can never come up by surprise.
No, but it also makes, I like the idea that she's just making people nervous. You can be plotting something totally harmless, but people are getting nervous. They can smell you again.
It's fun. She's just plotting out her galaxy outfit. Nico suspects that Nyx has it out for Bob, could have Bob trapped, as Bob is someone who has rejected his destiny and tried to rebuild his life, and Nyx is all about fate and, like, belonging to the darkness. He recognizes that Bob is likely a trap for him, but Nico wants to save Bob anyway, which reminds me of how Nico was a trap for the Seven, but they were like, we gotta save him anyway. Though also they were kind of like, well, he's on the way to the doors of death. Like, I don't know that that was the main driving factor.
I don't know if they would have gone. Hazel would have gone. Were like,
yeah, Hazel would have gone. The rest of them are like, this kid's weird.
So sad because he's constantly missing them and thinking about each of them.
Yeah, and well.
They don't really think about him.
No, Hazel does. Hazel's a good girl.
Yeah.
So, Nyx also has it out for Nico specifically because he's someone who rejected his destiny. He belonged to the darkness, as she said, yet he lives in the light. And he also helps other people and creatures find alternative ways to live, like how he helped Bob. He helped the Trog's friend a new home. Nico feels kind of uncomfortable when they all point out that he helps them. He's like, no, I don't. I'm not a good person. I belong to the darkness. But then the Trogs offer to guide them.
What?
No!
This is 14-year-old Aaron.
Stop! Don't call me out like that.
No, I belong to the darkness.
To the darkness.
We're like, Aaron, we love and value you. You're like, the darkness is my only friend.
I'm like, okay, but have you considered that you're lying to me?
And everyone hates me, actually. 14-year-old Aaron was a hoot.
Thank you so much. I still think that everyone hates me often and is lying to me. So it's all a conspiracy. I think this is why I love Nico and also am mean to Nico.
I think this is, the difference is now I don't hear about it. Before, I used to get a text every evening being like, they all hate me. And I'm like, oh,
that's
God.
That's true. Now it, like, comes out every once in a while where I have a moment where I'm like, does everyone actually hate me? Is this all, like, a bit everyone's doing? It's like a practical joke. It's great.
This is the longest practical joke I've ever pulled.
It's like one of those prank shows where the cameras come out.
It's like, I've spent roughly 14 years of my life
pulling this one off.
Ba-dum-tsh.
You're like, I mean, everyone listening to the podcast is in on it.
They're all gonna DM you at once saying, you suck now.
Oh no, am I Nico?
We have to go shopping at...
Please no.
Hot Topic now.
Is Hot Topic still a thing, I think? Right?
It is.
Isn't
but
that like
it's,
fandom stuff now, though?
It got bought by something, and so they had a rebrand. And I was reading an article about it a couple days ago, and I forgot everything in the article. So, you know, that was useless. Oh,
good.
But it basically is like...
information our brains retain.
I think it's because they got proper licensing after when we were in a certain age. So now they get a lot of fandom stuff. Whereas before, them having stuff, it was mostly like unlicensed products. So it almost felt illegal to be getting those things.
Now it's like they have a lot of Harry Potter merch now there, which I'm like, would have loved when I was 12. But now I'm like,
maybe it was good
doing it. Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't have spent all of our money at Hot Topic.
No, I think it would have been a problem.
Or like told too many people too much of our interest. You know, head to toe Harry Potter gear at 12 is like asking to be bullied.
Yeah. Yeah. It was already bad enough, you know?
No, everyone liked you.
No, they didn't.
Oh, we've known each other for too long.
Too long, okay. Okay, well, go back to Nico. This is not about me. This is about Nico. And his little trogs, who... Oh, Nico also falls asleep here and has nightmares, and I didn't write any of that down because I felt like they were just kind of repetitive of things we already know that Nico's traumatized by. Anyways, then we get a canoe flash forward. So in the canoe flash forward, which I think is more confusing this place it is in the novel because it just came off the tail end of 3 flash backwards chapters. And then we're in the present and then we're flashing forward to them telling stories about the past. The timelines are really mixed. Like, you have to have a very good grasp of the other 3 series to really understand what's going on here. Mostly Heroes of Olympus, but also Trials of Apollo. Anyway, so Nico and Will are telling the nymph Gorgeira about when they realized they had feelings for each other, which this part was really cute. Mm-hmm. Nico's was the time Will helped Nico process his emotions about Leo. Nico was pissed off that Leo was alive and had tricked them without telling them, like had tricked all of them and intentionally kind of sacrificed himself, not fully knowing that he would survive. And so Will made Nico go into the woods and just scream. And it was the first time Nico felt like someone understood what he needed. And he started to look at Will differently then. Yet Will's moment actually came earlier. He's like, I fell first in the infirmary after the battle at the end of Heroes of Olympus. Will asked Nico to help out in the infirmary, and Nico did, even though he had no clue what he was doing and kind of looked like an idiot. And Nico's effort and dedication did Will in. And I thought these were cute.
It was very cute. I also really liked it because it reminded me of one of Rick's best bits, which is everyone getting in a line and punching Leo, and then some people getting back into line so they can punch him again.
Yeah, and Nico mentions, he's like, I probably would have punched him harder if I hadn't screamed first, so.
Yeah.
Love
Will
that.
Will saved Leo's life.
He did. Nico would have just, like, stomped on the ground and opened a portal to hell.
Stabbed him a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, well, you can come back from the dead, can't you? Okay, so then after the flash forward, this is where I lost it a little bit in my mind. I was like, we're now going to Will's perspective. A lot of back and forth narratively. Mm-hmm. Very confusing. If I was in a writing group with this book, I would have some comments on the like narrative structure. So Will is dreaming about his mom. It distorts into a nightmare where she tells Will, he's going to leave you behind, you fool. Yet despite Will's fears, he won't back down from this quest, and we see his determination through his perspective. Because it is nice to see, because when we get Nico's perspective, he's very convinced that Will is going to leave, and he sees Will being actively uncomfortable, and we learn from Will's point of view, like, he is uncomfortable, but he's willing to stay there with Nico. Screech, Bling, and Hiss Majesty then set off with Nico and Will to lead them to the entrance to Tartarus through some tunnels. It's like a secret way they know, because they don't want to get caught by Hades, who will not let Nico go into Tartarus again. They travel through the dark tunnels, which set Will's nerves on edge as a son of Apollo. He feels irritated and confused without sunlight, which I was like, same. a melody comes to him as he's thinking about all the things he misses. He thinks about his mom and her music, and he starts to just hum and sing, and then he begins to shine and glow, which I was like, here's that. This is very Trials of Apollo coming through here. We have to have a little singing. Oh, as a son of Apollo. It does help him feel better and keep moving, but he also knows that he should conserve his energy and he might need to make himself glow at some other point. Hand in hand, he and Nico emerge from the tunnel. Alrighty, my notes. I did touch on my notes about the time jumps and POV shifts. Very confusing. I am curious if other people find it confusing or if they just breeze past it. I am wondering, in your, you just highlighted this under your outline, so I wonder if it's different. So in my book, my legal physical book, it's really pretty, like the pages change color for flashbacks and dreams. They get kind of like a dark gray, or the chapter title for the Will perspective. It's like a sun instead of like a dark sun. But I'm wondering if in your very legal digital copy, if this is a thing.
It is not. And I think it would be very helpful if it was, because I'll start
reading. Is the canoe there?
There is the canoe, but it's just like very abrupt. And my book does not label it as like a separate chapter. So I can't go to it in like the table of contents. So it just kind of emerges. And so I don't know when it's coming. And I also like when it switches perspective, I just have to read and find out. And also.
Yeah.
The dreams, I have no idea when it's dreams. So, wow, this would have been a lot really helpful for having it being color-coded.
Yeah, I think that is a helpful choice. But so much of reading, like so many people read digital versions, legal ones. And I wonder, I think just in today's day and age, like if you have to have like those kind of a lot of physical changes in your book to denote changes in the narrative, like maybe your narrative's too complicated. I don't know. I'm not a publisher, so who knows. Other notes. I wrote that I missed the dumb giants. I thought it was fun to see them again. I do still struggle with taking Nyx seriously, because I just keep thinking about how Annabeth and Percy defeated her by talking about a travel brochure.
Yeah.
And then the fact that Nico just casually drops the lore. He's like, oh, I met Eclis once in a dream, who's like that goddess of sorrow that Percy and Annabeth met, and she was like very traumatizing for them. And she told Nico in a dream that she couldn't do anything to him because he was already so full of sorrow. Can you imagine?
That poor baby. What an also horrible thing to hear, too, where you're like, I'm trying my best. And it's like, no, you're literally the saddest person I've ever met.
She's like, I'm the goddess of sadness. And you're like, wow, who can't do anything for you?
No.
Wow.
I also struggle with Nyx as the main villain because, like, you're telling me that Knight itself is, like, concerned about a 12-year-old boy not being goth enough.
Yeah. Well, and like the, she's a primordial god. Like she's like up there power level with Gaia. And Gaia was a villain I couldn't take seriously either because she was so powerful that she should have just been able to destroy everyone with like a snap of her fingers. And same with Nyx, honestly. Like if she's the goddess of all this darkness and stuff, she should be able to just win easy.
Yeah.
But I get they have to, I mean, any villain, you have to give flaws. But sometimes the flaws, like, you know, the brochure thing, I'm like, okay, she's can't be that easy to manipulate as a primordial goddess. But
I mean, the only reason they were able to defeat Gaia is because she hadn't fully awoke. By the time she was trying to fully awake, they exploded her. Yeah. Nyx is awake and Nyx, in her domain. And she gets defeated.
With all her babies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'll have to read and find out. Maybe she's a lot more terrifying and unstoppable as we go.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds unconvinced. Yeah. All right. I have chapters 21 through 24. So Nico is really concerned about Will after emerging from the tunnel back into the beautiful, lovely underworld air. Will needs to rest and sit down. They give him nectar, and Nico's trying to grapple with being someone who takes care of Will, whereas Will is someone who takes care of everyone. So he's trying to find out how he can do this. He's not like that kind of person, he thinks. Even the Trogs are worried for Will. They keep looking at him, and he looks paler than even Nico, who's the ghost child. And so they give Will and Nico some space. They go hunt some lizards, and Nico and Will decide to chat. Will asks Nico about Hades' palace and then suggests visiting it, much to Nico's surprise. Nico's kind of been holding on to Will's displeasure of all things underworld, and he's really touched by the suggestion of Will wanting to meet Nico's dad. It's like Will is powering through the things that Nico dislikes or the things that other people dislike about Nico and still trying to accept them is all Nico wants. The Trogs say that there's one more obstacle before they can head into Tartarus, and that's the farm. Nico has like a vague memory of what this might be from his father has told him years ago, but he can't really name any details. And he kind of wishes Hazel was with him because Hazel, who has lived in the underworld for a good amount of time, knows the area a lot better than Nico does, and they can kind of build off of each other. So he really has no details of what the farm is, but Will is trying to be very optimistic and say, you know, one more obstacle. How hard could it be? So they're led to a place where Nico notices that there are no spirits, no wails of the damned, and their path is illuminated by blue light. It's a little off-putting, and Nico has never seen this place before. Will hums quietly to connect with Nico as they walk, and he's slower than ever. So Nico's keeping an eye out for him to make sure that he's not draining all of his powers, but also understands that Will needs some kind of connection to camp, to Nico, to this place to bring him comfort. So he's like, just as long as he doesn't glow, we should be okay. As they walk, a man with a bull head who looks very much like your man, the Minotaur, runs up to them. Nico knows who he is and is disappointed that this man has found them. Now we're going to do a canoe flash forward. Even though Will
there's
is
so many.
So many. Even though Will is actively dying, Gregora won't give them the boat. She's like, well, stories are never a waste of time. And Will's bleeding out in front of her. So Nico's like, fine, let me go back to my story and let me tell you how I asked out Will. I didn't really understand this bit because I don't remember reading the part of Will being asked out, because what ends up happening is so Nico talks about some trauma. He mentions back in the 40s he had made a casual mention how he thought Aries in his mythomagic cards looked very pretty. He didn't even understand his own sexuality. He wouldn't label himself gay. He just remembered that his friend had a reaction that made him feel very badly about his friend, said you should not think that way, you should never say anything like that again, you should, if you have any of these feelings, you need to correct it. And Nico, being little at the time, just knew what he had done was bad. So Jason is like the first person in his life who stood by him every time Nico presented anything that was a little bit gay or anything like that. He was shut down by the people around him, whereas when he was forcibly outed by Cupid, Jason stayed and made him feel safe. And then he kind of explains homophobia to this nymph. I don't know. I was just kind of like, he's like, even homophobia like comes deep into the underworld. I was reading it.
Maybe like as a child, like a kid reading this, I can see how that's like really can be really impactful, especially if it's a kid in an environment where there is a lot of homophobia.
It's more like, for me, I keep, which is what I talked about in my notes, is I keep having this moment where I'm trying to figure out which Greek mythology Rick is trying to tell us. I thought, because like ancient Greece, like, I mean, not lesbian relationships were not allowed because women were not people. Let's be clear. Yeah. But like, homosexuality was defined very differently, and so and it was very open. But at the same time, it was more clouded around toxic masculinity. And I thought that would have been an interesting thing to tap into, which is like, you know, people have been gay and having relationships with other men for decades. But like, what does that mean? Why is it not accepted to like marry another man, to love, to be gentle and to have this gentle, caring love rather than just about being dominance and sex, especially when you start going into Rome and ancient Rome? And so I keep having to grapple with the version that Rick is telling us where he's like, yeah, people can be gay, and like explaining that to a society where that's accepted. So like Nico telling the nymph about homophobia and like being gay is okay kind of takes me out of it for a moment, where I'm like, okay, which version are we trying to talk about right now?
Like, how much of history are we bringing into this conversation, kind of? Or is it fully rooted in, like, the present and present experiences of homophobia?
But I think, again, like you said, this is me as an adult reading this book. I think when a kid is reading this book, this is very impactful. And yeah, it's also explained in a way that makes a lot more sense to a kid or a young teen.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically what happened when Nico tried to ask Will out, he had asked the nymphs of Camp Half-Blood to set up a picnic for him and Will, but they instead set up a coming out party. So the entire camp is there, they're eating, and Nico decides he wants to own it. He's like, since he wasn't able to have like a prop, it was taken away from him, and I'm really glad Rick addressed how Cupid outed him, and how that was not okay, and so he acknowledges that, so he decides that he's going to reclaim that moment, and so he decides to stand up and tell everyone he's gay, and everyone around him is really surprised, but because he's like, you know, king of darkness, they're just mostly surprised that he's talking to them at all. Will points out that it actually led all the other campers who were gay to come out as well. Like, he made them very much more comfortable. Like, Nico paved this amazing path for all of them. And Will accepted his bisexuality, and Piper's accepting of her sexuality later. And so it's just this domino effect. And they all have Nico to thank. So as they're talking and really uplifting each other, Gregoria says to Nico that the whispers he's been hearing the entire time they've been waiting for this boat are actually full of envy of him and Will. She also has a sudden change of heart. She decides that they've given her enough stories and they need to go. So they get on the boat and they head towards the other side. And Nico notices that storytelling is healing Will. So after they take the boat over, they go sit on the dock. Nico asks Will if he remembers their first kiss. So we flash to the present again, or we flash back to the present. Anyway, Nico introduces them all to Minotes. So this is a demon who tends to Hades' cattle. Minotes grows the food for the underworld and all the workers there. And this is also where most of the demigod's stash of nectar and ambrosia is grown. It's taken from the trees as a bunch of ghosts who are harvesting sap. And he mentions that camp has its own grove that's manned by the nymphs up there, but most of the supply comes from the underworld. So Minotes needs their help, and he's literally begging for it. He then starts threatening for it. He says, if you don't help me, I'm going to tell Hades you're here and that you're trying to go to Tartarus, so you have no choice. Basically, he needs Nico to get him fruit from Persephone's garden. Also, this demon is gay, and he's in relationship with a giant. And that giant, I know, he's like, so you guys can stop being so judgmental. And Will's like, this is literally my boyfriend. And that giant is none other than Geron from the Battle of the Labyrinth, if you remember him. He was the guy, the three-bodied man who was running Apollo's sun cow farm and with the scary horses that Percy had to clean out, the stables. Anyway, this demon wants a gift for his boyfriend. And so he wants some special fruit from Persephone's amazing garden. And I was like, where is the story going?
I think this is the side quest. I do remember this the first time I read it. This side quest in particular, I was like, I do not. I'm really trying to see what the point of this was, and I don't know.
I think it's the Persephone of it all.
Yeah, I think so too.
Could have been done a little bit like they had to go through Persephone's garden in order to get to Tartarus or something. It could have made it less. Like, they have passed Hades' palace. Now they have to go back to Hades' palace.
Yep,
feels to get fruit. To get fruit. So Minotes gives them donkeys. They're special demonic donkeys that ride really fast. Mm-hmm. And they give them a ride to Hades' palace while the Trogs stay behind and decide to, like, network with this man. So Will and Nico zip into the palace, passing huge gates where tons of guards are stationed. This is now from Will's perspective. They follow the wall, and Nico leads them to a small gate, which he has the key to. They're about to enter when Nico stops them because Persephone herself is in her garden tending to it. They're all surprised because they expected Persephone to be above ground this time of year. Also, Will is stunned by her beauty. He's like, oh, does my bisexuality make you feel uncomfortable and I'm attracted to this woman? And Nico's like, gentle reminder that this is my stepmother we're talking about. It's not that she's a woman. It's that she's my stepmother.
Yeah, it's like, this is a different situation.
Will is put in his place. So we are not, they were also not given specifics of what fruit they were supposed to get. So Nico's like, just go OG and grab some pomegranates. But every time Nico tries to grab it, his hand goes through the fruit. Will is able to pick them, but he also has to fight the urge to eat them. The story of the pomegranate is if you eat it, you get stuck in the underworld forever. I think Nico doesn't have anything to offer the underworld because he's already been claimed by it, is my guess. Mm-hmm. They don't really discuss why Will can pick it and Nico can't because they're trying to get out of there. They run through the garden and Nico goes through the gate to make sure the coast is clear. As he's leaving, Will hears a rustle and thinks it's Nico, but instead Persephone herself walks out. Persephone has literally frozen Nico in his spot, and she's like, he can't hear us, so let's talk. She's questioning Will, who's, again, floored by her beauty. He's like, I can't get over how hot this woman is. Yep. He admits that they are stealing the pomegranates for a quest, and this is a quest that is not sanctioned by Hades. Persephone admits, you know, she's like trying to understand what they're doing together, and she admits that she doesn't, hasn't treated Nico well in the past, and she should, but it had been a reminder that Hades cheated on her. But she now is trying to step up a little bit. She also is very curious about her stepson's boyfriend, so she wants to get him to get to know him a little bit more. She asks Will if he sees the depth of Nico, like she's now seen him more of a whole person rather than just this object that was created out of her husband's affair. And she recognizes that he has multitudes and that he's a good person, but he also has a lot of darkness. Will does see the depths of Nico, but he wants to know how she can love someone from the underworld. He's finally met someone he can talk to who has a similar-ish experience as him, which he brings up. He's like, weren't you kidnapped by Hades? And she's like, yes, like, you should never be forced into a relationship. And she, like, explains it, but she's like, don't compare your relationship to mine. Mine is very different. Mine's is ancient. It's a different time, different situation. We're also gods. Don't question it. That's how, like, Rick dealt with it. He's like, we're just moving on. Stop it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Persephone explains how she came to love the underworld and her husband. So she also realizes the pros she got away from her mother, Demeter, who was controlling and not very nice to her. And so she found an escape through her husband in the underworld. And she also notes that they have both light and darkness. And because they are surrounded by death, they appreciate life more. Even though it's hard for people who are surrounded by life always to notice that, she notices that they appreciate life more. Persephone suggests that Will, instead of trying to pull Nico into the light every single time and demanding he stay them there with him, joins Nico in the darkness. Because Will also has darkness. Even if he's the son of Apollo's sunshine and music and poetry, Will has darkness in him as well. And he thinks that instead of pulling Nico one way, meeting him halfway is going to be more beneficial. Persephone thinks that they will make a fine couple as long as Will tries to understand Nico. Persephone tells Will that the pomegranates are a gift and not tell Nico they interacted. She disappears and unfreezes Nico. They climb back on the donkeys and they head to the farm.
Whew, what a side quest that was.
Yeah, it was really random. I love this. I do like the talk that Persephone did have with Will. I think that was an important interaction for them to have. And I also think it's nice once in a while in these goddamn books for an adult figure to be able to have an emotionally intelligent conversation with their children or other children. It's just really refreshing. So that was really nice. But I just, again, wish it wasn't like this random side quest for this demon bull man. Instead, if it was just like they need these pomegranates for some reason to get into Tartarus, so they have to make a quick pit stop on the way. Or they accidentally run into her while they're trying to get into Tartarus. But this is a lot more roundabout, I think. Like there was an extra two chapters that didn't need to happen because of it.
Yeah. But we saw Persephone, so that's
we
fun.
We did. That was all for me. Thanks, Rick. Mm-hmm.
He says you're welcome. Mm-hmm. All righty. Let's do our lightning bolt round questions. So my question that is why I looked up what all of Nyx's children are is, which of Nyx's children would you want to be?
That's a good question. I'm currently looking up the children.
I know there's like a lot of them.
I feel like
I wrote down some of them, but I was like, there's just a lot going on here.
Moros would be fun, the god of doom and destiny. Yeah. Doom and destiny. So I think that's like a fun like mix. Mm-hmm. Apate is deceit.
Ooh.
There's Kerr, who's destruction and death. I think Moros, Doom Destiny is my choice.
Okay. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm looking at them too.
There's Mamas, who's Blame. Mamas, who's Blame.
Ooh. That's fun. I did think of the Horde children. The Karis would be kind of fun because, like, you get a built-in little girl group, you know? Like, you you have a community. I think that would be really fun. And, a like, community violent of deaths.
Violent deaths, yeah.
yeah. Eris would be fun, too. The goddess of strife and discord. That's fun.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
You would do well there.
But, yeah. Oh, thank you so much. So well with I love fighting, you know me.
It'd be just such a
discourse.
I'd be really mad if like I have siblings who are like darkness and day and air and I was like the god of old age.
I was just looking at that one. That's definitely the worst one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, it says Garrus, that's the god of old age, showed the dichotomy of the virtue of achieving an old age and the pain that came with it. No thanks, don't want to be that one. Yeah, I think I would like to be one of the Hordes. I think that sounds fun. All right, my other question, what song would you sing to make yourself glow? Because Will is singing some song of his mother's.
The Firefly song.
Like the one from...
You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies.
Like, it has to be like a comfort song. Oh. No, that's good. That's good. I mean, a song about glowing.
I didn't put that together. Like, he glows because he's comforted. I'm just like, a song about light. What is a comfort song?
Right? I like that one. The firefly song. What's a song about light? There's like the one from Tangled about light.
Oh, that one's cute. Well,
my thought for like a comfort song... I honestly feel like it would probably be some kind of lullaby that I heard as a kid. I really liked from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the lullaby in that movie. I forget what it's called. Oh, Hushabye Mountain. I loved that song as a kid and used to make my parents sing it to me a lot. So
that's so cute.
Probably something like that. Some kind of little... It honestly is kind of a creepy song, I'm not gonna lie. Like, some, it's one of those... You know how lullabies are creepy when children sing them?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
My mom... Well, my entire family, I guess, is generationally have been singing this lullaby, and it's our go-to one. And so it was really fun because we were singing it to my niece, and it's translates to, like... Well, the song, I don't know if it has a title, but it's Jojo Lali, and it's like Sleep Now, and it's just like, it's a really cute little lullaby, and it's really fun because I don't know all the words, so I kind of, I know like 99% of the words, but I don't always remember it, and when I was little, I just kind of make up the words, but it's a very soothing song.
You just chime in when you know the words.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute. I like that.
All right, my question is, what fruit would you give as a gift, like a wooing gift to your partner?
Oh, a wooing gift. Well, I'd want to go for like a really weird fruit, like a dragon fruit.
Ooh, okay.
That's cool. And I think those are kind of expensive, so it's like kind of a statement. Like, yeah. I'm rich.
And this is rare. I had to hunt for this. I have not tried dragon fruit yet, I don't think. No, I have tried dragon fruit.
It's good in, like, smoothies and stuff, but honestly, by itself, like, it has to be the perfect amount of ripeness, and I think it's better if you live somewhere tropical, and we do not.
I think it was star fruit that I was, like, one of them is, like, very kiwi-like, and so I am allergic to kiwis, so I was like, I'm not going to try. Just in case I have an allergic reaction, I don't want to try it right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I have to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
I was like, pomegranate would be the meanest because it's so hard to peel.
Yeah.
My personal favorite fruit is mango, but I don't think I'd give that as a wooing gift because it's quite messy.
Yeah, I mean, you can keep it yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that I think of is like orange peeled, because that's the little, like, it's already peeled for you. The fruit has to be, I think the idea of cutting fruit up, pomegranate, that's been cut up already and like presented. That's nice. I feel like it's a mix of like, I got you this fruit and I've cut it up and presented it to you.
Yeah. That's nice. Eat the little seeds.
Mm. Yeah.
Lovely. All righty. Well, next time we will be back continuing this book with chapters 25 through 32 of The Sun and the Star.
If you're interested in supporting us, the links to our Patreon and Ko-fi are in the description along with our merch.
And if you are interested in sending us an audio message, maybe getting your voice on the podcast, the link to send us an audio message is also in the episode description.
Our social media is at Camp Half Pod. Our email is camphalfpod@gmail.com. You can message us or email us if you want to join the Discord.
And don't forget to rate and review.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.